Welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Join us as we explore the world of drink and food in New Orleans and beyond. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody. Hey, thanks for listening into the program this week. Brian Diaz here with you. Yep, I appreciate you being here. As always, friends, here on the NOLA Drinks Show, we got a really good show coming up for you here this week and today as you listen. Yeah, this show, this one right here. Our French Quarter Fest series is back, friends. Yep. And I can't be more excited about it. I love doing this series. As you know, if you listen to the show regularly, we get together with local musicians who perform at French Quarter Festival or some of their other events. And I'll get to that in a second. And we head over to Louisiana Music Factory, our other partner in this endeavor. Yeah, and we talk music, of course. And we talk food and drink and culture in New Orleans and all kinds of other stuff. And that's what we're doing here again today. We have Robin Barnes, the songbird of New Orleans, a fantastic jazz, R&B, and funk singer, joining us, along with Doyle Cooper, who is the leader of the Doyle Cooper Jazz Band, a super talented trumpet player, band leader, and really two. I knew Robin before. She's been on the show before. She's fantastic. Had never met Doyle before. What a great young man he is. We had a lot of fun, a lot of laughs, a lot of great conversation. So that is what we're going to be doing today. Now, why are we doing it here? French Quarter Fest will just happen in April, you're asking. And yeah, I think I've mentioned this before. We're going to be doing this year-round because our good friends at French Quarter Festivals Incorporated not only put on French Quarter Fest in mid-April, they do stuff throughout the calendar year. One of the big things that they do is coming up the first weekend in August, August 2nd through the 4th, and that's Satchmo Summerfest. Yes, Satchmo, the great Louis Armstrong. And that's what this festival is all about, is honoring the music and the legacy, the cultural impact and import of the late, great Louis Armstrong. It's a fantastic festival. It takes place at the Jazz Museum, formerly known as the U.S. Mint, right there at the edge of the French Quarter on Esplanade, right by the river. You know, everybody knows where it is, right? If you're from around here, if you're not from around here, easy to find in the corner of the French Quarter. And it's worth coming down here for this festival. Yeah, it's hot in August, but they got tents and they got cold beers and they got fans and they got misters and all that good stuff. And it's just a great lineup of music. Obviously, the influence of Louis Armstrong. So you'll hear some of his music or things that he inspired, but you're going to hear a lot of all kinds of different stuff as well. So be sure to check that out. And yeah, I think we'll probably do one more of these before the festival. We're going to have a whole bunch of stuff with Tales of the Cocktail going on next month, as you know. So yeah, we'll squeeze another one in there. I think that's the plan. But this one, again, featuring the great Robin Barnes and the great Doyle Cooper. A lot of fun, great conversation there. Friends, next week's show, also a very important one, a little bit of a shift in gears. Some of the details are still shaping up, but we are going to be talking with some folks connected to the craft brewery industry here in Southeast Louisiana, and we're going to be talking about distribution laws. Pretty complex subject. I've talked about it on the show from time to time. I think if you do listen to the show regularly, you probably know by and large how I feel about our three-tiered system. Not a big fan on a lot of levels, but it is what it is. We're going to be talking about some of the struggles that the craft brewing industry has faced lately, legislatively and regulatorily. Is that a word? Regulatorily? Sure. And it's going to be an interesting conversation because we're going to kind of get down to some brass tacks, I think, about how distribution works and how it can be challenging for a small producer of alcohol, not just beer, in this state to really be effective and get their product out there and so on and so forth. So yeah, that'll be a great show next week. Friends, want to point out a very important event happening this Saturday. If you're in the New Orleans area, I strongly encourage you to go check this out. It's called Just Cause, a boozy bake sale for reproductive rights, taking place, as I said, this Saturday on the 22nd, 3 to 7 p.m. at Magazine Merchant House, which is 1150 Magazine Street. The event, the proceeds are there to raise money for Planned Parenthood Gulf Coast and the New Orleans Abortion Fund, two great organizations that really need our help right now more than ever. It's an all-ages event, and how this is going to work is you can buy food and drink tickets, and yeah, that will get you, you can taste it, it's a bake sale, right? So all these different, it's going to be 50 or so chefs and bartenders out there. The chefs, of course, are going to be making treats, savory and sweet treats, and drink, your food and drink tickets will get you that. And then we're also going to have several New Orleans bartenders out there making up drinks, and the tickets will get you that. 21, of course, you get a wristband is how that works. And the event is put on by Chef Mason Hereford and Lauren Agudo of Turkey and the Wolf, and Molly's Rise and Shine, Chef Megan Foreman of Gracious Bakery, and friend of the show here was just on about 3 weeks ago with us, Mandy Bordelon. All kinds of others involved. Our friends Neil Bodenheimer and Kirk Estopinall of Cure and Cane and Table are going to be out there holding down some of the bar program. We got folks from Willa Jean out there, Nina Compton from Compare La Pan and Bywater American Bistro, and a whole lot more. And it's also put on by Bacchanal Wine, the fine wine establishment there in the Bywater. Go check out Bacchanal NOLA on Facebook. Again, at Bacchanal NOLA for details on the event this Saturday. And as I said, it's called Just Cause, a boozy bake sale for reproductive rights. And as a matter of fact, the next evening on Sunday, actually at Bacchanal, is a Primal Fest to benefit reproductive rights. And that's going to be a food-oriented event. It's $40 a head. And you can find out more details. I don't know quite as much about that one, but you can find out more details on that event on Bacchanal's Facebook page as well. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. And then we're going to be back with our featured interview. Yep, French Quarter Fest series over at Louisiana Music Factory. Robin Barnes and Doyle Cooper. Come on back.
And Greek is your mouth a little weak when you open it to speak? Are you
Welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here with WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Thanks for tuning into the show, friends. As always, just when you thought it was safe, the French Quarter Festival series has returned. We have our Satchmo Fest installment, I'm going to call it, and I'm pleased to be joined by my two guests, Robin Barnes and Doyle Cooper. Robin, how are you?
Awesome.
Great to see you again.
Good to see you.
Yeah. And Doyle, how you doing, man?
I can't complain.
Excellent, man. I appreciate that. That's good. Yeah. We're all happy here on it. It's a Saturday, so when you folks are hearing this, whenever you're hearing this, it's about a week and a half ago. However that works, that's entirely up to you. Satchmo Fest is coming up August 2nd. It kicks off, and these two performers, great artists, are going to be performing there. But let me start here, and I'll go ahead and start with you, Robin. Now, let's talk a little bit with both of y'all about, you both grew up in musical situations, I think is fair to say, right? Mm-hmm. Family stuff and that kind of thing. I know you sung in church choir.
Yeah,
right?
So my whole family are musicians. I'm the baby of seven. All six are boys and all played instruments. So between singing in church since I was 6 years old to playing in my family's band my entire life, that's music's in my blood.
Yeah, fair enough. And you too, Doyle, is that right?
Yep. Music's in my blood. My mom made a living being a vocalist for a few years. My dad also played a little bit of music, but they both went on to jobs that actually paid.
Smart people. And I was telling you, Doyle, before we went on the air, I was talking to your mom yesterday, who's also your manager, and it took me quite a while to put together the fact that you're both called Cooper. Yeah, I'm really pretty slow on the uptake here, but now we got all that sorted out. Your mom, Leslie Cooper. Check her out on WWOZ, by the way.
Tuesday morning.
Yeah, there you go. She does a great show. Has been doing it for a while.
That's your mom?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and this is totally, Robin, this is why I'm just so slow across the board. It took me a while to figure out that was
what
Leslie from OZ
world.
And Doyle's
yeah.
mom and all this kind of stuff. Doyle, and I always hate to ask people, you know, describe your music because I think it's an unfair question, but maybe tell us a little bit about who are some of your influences and maybe some elements that you like to bring into what you do.
My influences are from everyone from obviously Louis Armstrong to Al Hurt to you know, the Meters to Dr. John. You know, my family luckily wasn't in a musical rut. You know, my dad listens to a lot of different stuff. My mom listens to a lot of different stuff. Being classically trained in trumpet, I had to listen to a lot of classical music. So I'm fortunate to be have a lot of input from a lot of different sources. So if you hear my band, we're not just playing a single type of music, you know, it's it has we take funk aspects and put it into some traditional jazz, and you know, we play New Orleans R&B, and you know, we might take you to the streets for some brass band music. You never know what we're feeling that night, you know. So
now, you started playing when you were about 10, is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah, and your mom told me, I keep bringing your mom up, I'm sorry, but your mom told me that that you played your first Satchmo Fest when you were 12, I think she said, is that correct?
I believe so. It was right after Katrina. No, so that would have been 13.
Okay, wow.
I think it was 13. So it was the year right after Katrina that Satchmo Fest had the parade and everything.
Yeah. So. Wow, man, that's impressive. Starting at 10 and then playing Satchmo Fest at 13, right?
That's amazing.
That's amazing.
I wasn't headlining, but it was. It's not like this year. I was really fortunate to be able to get on stage with the Trumpet Submit, and you know, there was probably 20, 30 trumpet players on stage all at once.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah.
It's really cool.
Right on. What about you, Robin? So definitely different musical influences, I know. How would you describe yourself?
I would say I definitely am not in a box because of my upbringing, similar to your background. My parents listened to different things. Like, my father was an adamant about New Orleans traditional music, as well as the Meters, as well as Al Green, versus my mom, who was into ABBA and Elton John. And then my upbringing was gospel, but then my mom had me classically trained in opera, so I'm a soprano one and alto two, and then at the same time gigging with my family my entire life. So I would like to say my vibe, my sound is based really upon what I feel the energy is from the crowd. I think one of the cool things about New Orleans artists is that we're kind of, you know, if you will, thrown into the fire. We're on stage and people can perceive that, you know, okay, this song might work. And usually by your first song, you can gauge how this party's
sure.
about to go.
Yeah,
whether
right.
it's they're intimately want to hear their listening crowd, or if they want to party. And the cool thing about all of us that are born and raised here, the experience and the adaptability is kind of why we're never put in a box. It's kind of why, you know, yes, we do jazz, but then at the same time we do R&B, but then at the same time we could do funk, at the same time we could do it's so crazy. And I think that's one of the things that I appreciate about Louis Armstrong, because with Louis Armstrong, you know, people think of him as jazz, but at the time he was changing things too. Like, he wasn't doing traditional jazz, he
absolutely.
Was changing it up. So I think that's why we have such a great lineage of just shaking things up and letting it just be us.
And mixing it in, right?
Yep.
And mixing it up. And I think, thank you for saying that, because that's actually, y'all, why I always ask the question the way I do. Because I'd rather hear kind of what people, what they put into their pot, if you will, to describe their music, and then how that kind of comes out. Because that's the only way you can really answer that question, I think, in this town.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
When did you start? Go ahead, Doyle.
If Satchmo was alive today, I can guarantee that he would not be playing the same music that he was playing.
Without a doubt, man.
Right.
There's no way.
I couldn't agree more. When did you start playing, Robin?
So I started, I would say my official gig was when I was 7, and it was actually for a wedding. That was the first time I got paid, let's put it that way.
Okay.
It was a wedding gig. And
I'm 7, that's pretty good.
7, yeah, and I had to sing At Last, and I didn't sing At Last, I sang At Least. Think of the words starting with the word At Least. So I learned from the beginning to make sure I was really prepared for every gig I have at 7.
Great. That would be like one step down from the Star Spangled Banner, right? Right, jacking that one
yeah,
up
messing
a little
that up.
Bit.
Yeah. I've never messed that song up since. I'll tell you that.
Good one. Now, Doyle, with you, you've played with different outfits and stuff, and maybe tell us a little bit about tell us what you're doing today, Doyle Cooper Jazz Band.
Today we're playing a normal Fridays at the Bourbon O. That's every Friday from 8 to midnight, and it's just a weekly kind of thing. There's a constant shuffle of people that are playing with me, because I really like to get great musicians to play with me, because it's one thing to have a strong leader in the band, but if the rest of the band is lacking, so it doesn't really pan out. So I love to get all these guys that are in high demand, and that being said, you know, you can't always get them. So there's always a constant change in the membership of the band, and So we're just, every time we get together, it's what song do you want to play today? What song do you want to try today? Mm-hmm, you know, mm-hmm. And it always turns out really, really awesome.
That's pretty
know?
Cool. So yeah. You get that's fun to be able to do that, right? Where you exactly. bring in different people, so then they bring their brush.
It's a breath of fresh air every time when you're playing with a different person. Because you know, there's something to be said about playing with the same people every week and having that rehearsed repertoire. But when you have different people in the group, everybody listens a little bit more intently. Everybody's tuning into each other just that much more intently because you have to be on your feet. You mm-hmm. have to be mm-hmm. on your toes. You know, you have to be able to adapt to what that person's doing. So it kind of changes the mood every week, which is refreshing.
Yeah, honestly. That's really cool. You know, Robin, with you, with the Firebirds is your band, right?
Yes.
Yes. And how long have you been doing that with that ensemble?
So I would say the Firebirds kind of came to life about 3 years ago, 3-4 years ago, because when growing up, everyone knew me as the little jazz singer, the little songbird, and I wanted to change things up, and I wanted to show people that, yes, I definitely can do jazz, but there's more to me than that. So with the Firebirds, it is when you hear Robin Barnes and the Firebirds, you know it's going to be, for lack of a better phrase, fire. It's going to be energy. It's going to be something different. It's going to be something powerful. And that really, I feel like, has been so much fun because that's all my festivals now. I really try to implement the aspect of, if you have Robin Barnes and New Orleans Songbird, you're going to get a mixture of my heritage with jazz. But if you get Robin Barnes and the Firebird, it's going to be a different element. Mm-hmm. Still paying homage to everything because I am New Orleans. I am New Orleans music, but I'm always going to try to push the envelope to show who I am as an individual. Mm-hmm. So yeah, the Fireverse has been super, super fun. Then that's like when we have the three horns. We can range from that to one horn with Brad Walker to, you know, my husband Pat Casey on bass and Oscar de Rossignoli on piano and then Shea Pierre on piano. Sometimes we'll get Shea Pierre on key bass. It's kind of a creation of just all these amazing artists together, and we just bring the fire every time.
Very cool. Awesome. Doyle, who are some of the people that I know you talked about? You kind of, it's always sort of changing, but maybe some names that you have been playing with lately.
Some good friends, Miles Lyons on trombone, sometimes on tuba. This really good sax player from Canada, Connor Stewart. He's been in town for a few years, but man, he's really sounding great. Old guy Danny Rubio on tuba. He played around town for a number of years, especially with the Dukes of Dixieland and James Morado on drums. We bring in all kind of people. Like I've had Ryan Hansler on keyboards, John Saavedra on guitar. It's a lot of. Kind of like the hang, you know. It's
gotcha. Who's around? Who wants? So yeah. When you, by virtue of changing different people, like you do and stuff, so the instrumentation frequently changed. Like sometimes, mm-hmm. gathering maybe sometimes guitar, sometimes not guitar.
Yeah, sometimes guitar, sometimes piano. Usually it's a sousaphone as opposed to a bass.
Okay.
Because bass player can play the tuba parts to brass band music, but it doesn't quite sound right, mm-hmm. you know. And with Danny, he plays tuba like nobody else in town. He can walk bass lines all day long.
That's cool.
So that him and Miles Lyons, they're two of my favorite tuba players in the city.
I always admire people that can do that. That's a tough instrument, man.
Well, I play it too. So.
Oh, you do? Okay. Well, you know, I don't. I just admire from afar.
I have respect for it.
No, I respect it. My dad plays both the electric, the upright, and the tuba. Yeah.
And pull. Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Well, let's do this, you guys. Let's take a little break here. And we're going to come back and we're going to chat a little bit more with Doyle Cooper and Robin Barnes. Friends, we're taking a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. Come on back. Thank you.
Is it heaven when it's singing blue? I say it with regret, but you're out of date.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian D is here with UWGSM.
You ain't heard nothing yet.
Wherever you may be, it is our French Quarter Fest series, Sachmo Summer Fest edition. I'm chatting here with Doyle Cooper and Robin Barnes. Pleasure to chat with you both. Thanks for joining me today. And hey, this segment we typically do, we kind of like to talk about food and drink, which is a very easy subject for us here in New Orleans as well. Like music, you can't separate these things, can we? And but I think what's really interesting, because both of you have a great perspective. We talk a lot about health and wellness on the show for people in the hospitality and by extension in the music industry here. And I think that's something that you guys are both really passionate about and your lifestyle takes after it. And Robin, you do a really cool initiative called Move Your Brass, not your.
Yes, sir.
Tell us about that a little bit.
So I started Move Your Brass when I ended up having a bloodstream and kidney infection after a tour, and I could have died in 2 days. Had to revamp my entire lifestyle, borderline diabetic. And as a New Orleanian, I did not know how to eat healthy. I didn't even know how to really work out. So I made one Facebook post to my fans expressing to them where I had been. And the organization has grown from a free running walking group to now 7 free programs a week, from cardio fitness to yoga, to free, to walking and running, and it's all completely free to the community. The cool thing about it is I wanted to implement something that will make me motivated, which was not a traditional fitness organization. I wanted to feel like a family. I wanted to feel like New Orleans spirit. And from there, it significantly has grown to, we're servicing over 500 New Orleanians in the greater New Orleans area a month.
Wow. So where do you go do this? I mean, like, you kind of, do you move it around?
Yeah. Or? So we partner now with City Park and Crescent Park, and as well as Duncan Plaza. So you can find more information and the free schedule on www.moveyaybrass.com.
Awesome. Cool. Thank you. Got it. We were just having the conversation, friends, during the break. It's not your, it's ya.
Yeah.
Well, now, Doyle, one of the things that we were talking about too, because, you know, your outfit, you're typically playing very often anyway in clubs and bars around town and elsewhere. And I think there's always a dynamic that can happen with musicians, hospitality industry members, when you're working in close proximity to alcohol. It can become it's just an easy thing to get yourself involved in.
Temptation.
I'll put it that way. Temptation, there's the word.
I found it to be really crucial to know your limits. When being around alcohol, and a lot of the clubs will give you an allotted free drink, you know, amount. Mm-hmm. You know, each band member gets a free drink per set or something. And you know, when you're playing 4 sets and people are wanting to buy you drinks, or you know, it's easy to go and get a discounted drink, you can easily overdo it. Mm-hmm. And I really found myself having control issues with that, because when I drink, I want to have an effect. I'm drinking to get drunk. Mm-hmm. Very rarely would I, at the time, would I drink to just have the taste of whatever I was drinking. Mm-hmm. Don't really remember getting home from a gig one night, and it kind of, for lack of better words, it scared the out of me. And I couldn't justify, you know, drinking on a regular day if I knew that I had to drive home. You know, and being in the bar, you really had to have the self discipline to, you know, it's really easy to go get alcohol.
It's right there, right?
It's right in front of you. As you're sitting on stage, most of the places you're staring at the bar. Mm-hmm. You're looking at the alcohol. It's right. Staring you back. Looking at you in the eye.
It's part of your audience.
Exactly.
Your exactly.
When there is no audience, it is the audience.
Well, Doyle, when somebody, how do you handle it then when somebody offers to buy you a drink when you don't want to?
I thank them profusely and try to explain it in ways that it's not disrespectful, because you know it's a offer of hospitality to offer somebody a drink. You know, a lot of people will do that instead of tipping the band.
Oh, right.
You know,
right.
Say they don't have any cash. You know, they're paying for all their drinks on a card. They're just like, hey, we'd love to buy the band around. But I can't speak for all my other band members either. You know, and they're grown adults and they can drink as much as they so choose. Mm-hmm. So I always tell them, it's like, thank you. I'm not drinking right now, but I bet my band members would love to take you up on that. And then I steer them in their direction.
And then
you know,
if there's a taker, there's a taker.
If there's a taker, there's a taker. Otherwise, they get to save their money.
Gotcha. Good one. Yeah. What about you, Robin? I mean, because you don't drink at all, do you?
No, I can't drink. Yeah, because of my kidney, I can't. Yeah.
So how do you, I mean, you're still working around. How do you handle it?
So whenever we're in a situation where people keep wanting to buy me drinks, and it's kind of like similar to you, they want to buy a drink, and it's just a gesture. They don't have cash to tip the band, but they want to be kind. I actually do mocktails. So I talk ahead at the time with the bartender, and they create a mocktail that looks like a cocktail, so the person feels good about themselves, but at the same time, I don't have to drink alcohol. Mm-hmm. And then sometimes I'll have a conversation with them and just be like, you know, sometimes people do have cash, and they just didn't know that person doesn't drink. So I'll just be like, oh my God, I just want to thank you so much for that kindness. If you'd like to buy me a mocktail, that'd be amazing. But, you know, please feel free to show that same hospitality to the band with the tip. Mm-hmm. And 9 times out of 10, they'll run to ATM or they'll just be like, do you have Venmo? That's a big thing now. They'll be like, do you have Venmo? I'll Venmo you. And I'm like, I got Venmo, PayPal, Swipe, I got Squarespace, Cash App.
Write you an invoice.
Zelle, whatever you want, whatever you want.
Cashier's checks.
Cashier's checks. Take money order, we take everything here. Right on, that's cool. I think that's really cool. I appreciate you saying this because we've talked about this a few times on the show where sort of etiquette in bars, right? So the same kind of thing goes down with a bartender where somebody, it's sort of the norm to offer to buy a round of shots for your friends and then include the bartender. Mm-hmm. And we try and let people know, listeners that are not in the service industry and the music industry, to understand that maybe they don't want to drink. It's a long, they got an 8-hour shift in a bar. Same thing. You guys are playing 3 sets, whatever it may be, to be sensitive to the fact that we really appreciate the gesture, but it may not go exactly that way. It's okay if it doesn't. And there's a lot of good bartenders out here that I know that make great mocktails anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Delicious mocktails. Mocktails is the thing now. Yeah, I highly recommend it.
I've been drinking a lot more like citrus juice, like pineapple juice or something, as opposed, and I'll get the bartender to put a little, you know, they, especially at the Bourbon O, they like to garnish with like flowers and fruit. Ooh. And stuff, make really pretty drinks. And I'll have one of those sitting up next to me and, you know, say, One of my go-to jokes is that when we're playing a Fats Waller piece, everybody take a big fat swaller of their drinks. All the old people laugh in the crowd, and everybody else is scratching their head. Who? Okay, I guess we'll drink. but it looks better than just holding up a glass of water, you know, having something that looks like a drink, like a mocktail.
Yeah, and it's tasty.
Because we're not uncomfortable. Exactly. That's the thing. We're fine. No, but you'd be surprised how many people feel uncomfortable. They're like, oh, they're not drinking. We're like, and?
Yeah.
So that's what's been helpful for me for the mocktails.
It just makes everybody feel on the same plane.
Comfortable, included. Exactly. And you still get that. Then you still get the camaraderie thing and all that, which I think is great. Well, let's do this, y'all. Let's take a break. And then we're going to come back, and when we come back in this last segment here on the radio portion, anyway, you guys are sticking around for another shot with Noel Drinks, our podcast-only portion. We're going to talk about Satchmo Summerfest, because that's kind of why we're here. Don't be mad at me if we don't talk about it over there at French Quarter Festival Incorporated. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drinks Show. Come on back.
Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for listening to the Noble Drink Show, friends, this week. As always, it's our French Quarter Fest series, and I'm here with Doyle Cooper and Robin Barnes, and we're so excited to be doing the segment that we all stood up. So we're actually taping while we're standing up. Actually, it's because we're sitting on wood stools and everybody's losing feeling in their feet, I think. So we decided to stand up here. So if you see a weird picture on Facebook, you know this is why we're standing up. It's just circulation, moving around, good for the body, that kind of thing. Well, let me ask you guys this question real quick, because we're going to talk about the festival and some things. This is the first show that we've done, because the show last week was actually taped the day that Dr. John passed. And so we didn't have the news at that time. So this is the first show that we've actually done where we know this. Any thoughts there? Just I know you mentioned Dr. John as one of your influences, Doyle, at the beginning.
I grew up listening to his music, and it's just a profound respect for a man that changed the game in New Orleans and really brought together a lot of different genres. There was a few other musicians like Professor Longhair that was bringing in a lot of like the rumba feel to the New Orleans music, mm-hmm. and mixing it, and he took it to the next level, mixing the rock and roll into it as well as the brass band kind of feel, and he had such a wide variety of music over his career, and was it like 6 Grammys or something like that. So it's just profound respect for a lost legend, mm-hmm.
Right. What about you, Robin? Well said, Doyle.
I know. That's where I'm like, oh, I have to go next. honestly, I was always such a big fan of Dr. John because of obviously his musicality, but also what he brought to the experience. I think one of the things that sometimes lacks in live music is people realizing that it's not just the music, it's about the entire experience. It's about how the artist can make you feel a certain way, how they can almost get into your soul. And even with his vibe, his style, I think one of my favorite things about Dr. John was he was in himself a character. He had style like a character, but nothing he did was cheesy, touristy, or anything that could, exemplify what you would think. People would be like, oh, these are the touristy New Orleans things. He was one of the first artists that really was able to show all of us that we could express our true heritage and our true style without having to worry about what it looks like to other people.
Right.
And I say that because I wear rings on all my fingers. I love my scarves. I love my headdresses. I love my feathers. And with him, I always looked up to him because he had such a versatility to his style and to his music. And it's like, when you saw Dr. John, you knew what he was about to do. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I think a lot of us aim for. When people see us, we want people to know from the jump. Not a question of what do you do. It's more like, I can't wait to see what you do.
What you do next. Yeah, right on.
He was authentic.
He was very authentic, yes. Very much himself. Well, you all are playing, as we talked about, Satchmo Summerfest coming up. Starts August 2nd and goes through the 4th there at the building that is the formerly known U.S. Mint, now the new Jazz Museum. U.S. Jazz Museum, New Orleans Jazz Museum,
all the things,
all of those things. Yeah,
sure.
It takes me a while to finally adapt it because I call it the Mint. It's like it's a New Orleans Jazz Museum now.
It will always be the Mint.
It'll always be the Mint. Right? Exactly. So it's a really cool festival. I think we're in about our 15th year, 18th year. I think it's been around for a while.
It has been a while.
They're going to be mad at me for not knowing that. But what does it mean, Doyle, to play it? Obviously, it's based around Louis Armstrong. And actually, you said something great at the beginning. You said if Louis Armstrong was still around today, he most certainly wouldn't be playing the stuff that he played for 40 years ago.
Yeah, it's great. It's a festival that's at a time where normally there is no fest. It's too hot.
It's August. Yeah.
So it's an opportunity for musicians to play, especially the ones that are still in town. Because a lot of musicians will leave town during the summer. It's too hot. They can travel and make more money or whatever, or get a wider base, and it's a way that people can get their music out during that hot hot month.
Yeah, that's a good perspective on it.
And it's a tribute to one of the most important musicians in all of history. Without
right.
Louis Armstrong doing what he did, the music that you listen to today would not be the same.
Absolutely. That's a great point. What about you, Robin? What are your thoughts?
I don't know. I always have this like excitement about doing this festival just because born and raised here, you always, you know, your aim in life is not necessarily to be a superstar. It's almost just leaving a mark on this world like the legends that you look up to. And to be able to be a part of a festival that is significantly focused on everyone's hero, to be honored and selected to perform in that same suit, mm-hmm. it's such an honor. I mean, that means that your city sees you in a light that almost emulates, if not pays tribute to someone who is the hero to everyone in this world. Mm-hmm. So that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, that's also a great answer. Now, will you both be doing Louis Armstrong numbers, either ones that he wrote or ones that he made famous, mixing in a little? I know, because you're not, I want people to know that it's not just going to all be Louis Armstrong music per se.
Oh, no.
But
no.
It's always nice to be able to give that nod, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Especially as a trumpet player myself, I will be heavily playing tribute to Satchmo himself. However, like I said earlier, I have a hard time putting my band in a box, mm-hmm. because I like to play funk. I like to play New Orleans R&B. And just like I said, Louis Armstrong wouldn't be doing the same thing. You know, I'm not going to be that stickler that says I have to play the Louis Armstrong Hot 5 record, sure. You know, mm-hmm. note for note.
Yeah,
you know,
can take those. You can take those compositions, exactly, right? And we bring can that treatment
just
to it.
Just like I do on a weekly basis. We'll take songs and put different feels to them, mm-hmm. you know, and it completely freshens that song up. You know, something that, like for instance, we haven't played the song Hindustan for a number of weeks because you play it for years and it gets monotonous. But I had this idea and I asked my drummer Jams to put the Poinciana beat on it, which has this kind of a Caribbean Latin-y kind of feel to it, and it completely changed the mood of the song. Mm. Everybody was smiling when I called the song and put to have that beat on it, you know, the crowd was just like, oh, this is cool, you know, it's a little different from what we're all playing. And I plan to do that on stage. I plan to not put my band in a box and, you know, sure. just play what Louis Armstrong recorded, because, you know, he didn't get to record everything that he wanted.
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. You know? Right. Well, Robin, we got about 2 minutes left before I got to close the radio portion of the show. So, yes to that question?
All of the above.
All of the above.
Of course, okay. We're going to be paying tribute to New Orleans and Louis Armstrong, but at the same time, I always do a rendition of all of the classics because I've been playing this music my whole life. I want to put my own spin on it.
Sure.
So, okay. It's cool. Going to be awesome.
Awesome. When are you playing at the festival, Robin?
I will be playing August 3rd, 6 to 7.
Yep, 6 to 7:10.
6 to 7:10.
I have the information.
Get those extra 10 hours. 10 minutes.
That's
10 minutes,
more
not
tunes,
10 hours.
Right?
Yeah. Oh my goodness.
Two more bonus tunes right in there. What about you, Doyle? When you
I'm August 3rd at 1:30.
Okay, cool. Doyle, how do people find out about you and your music and connect with you?
They can look
the
me up on Facebook via Doyle Cooper or the Doyle Cooper Jazz Band. Or you can look me up online at www.doylecooperjazzband.com or theredhotbrassband.com.
Awesome. Robin, what about you?
So you can find me on Facebook at Robin Barnes Music. You can find me on Instagram at New Orleans Songbird, because that's my title, trademarked. or you can find me on my website, robinbarnesmusic.com. Or I play at Spotted Cattle on Sundays, 7 to 10, and I'm the headliner at Windsor Course, so come say hi.
Yeah, for sure. Cool. Well, you guys are going to stick around for another shot with Noel Drinks, but at this point, friends, we're going to close off the radio portion of the show. If you are listening to the radio, go get the podcast, because you get to hear these guys talk more, and you don't want to hear me talk more, so I'll try and keep it to a minimum. And we'll let them talk. So friends, we're going to close out the radio portion. As I said, remember to be kind to one another, use your turn signal, and until next time, cheers, y'all. All right, everybody, thanks for sticking around for another shot with Noah Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you. Hey, hope you are enjoying this conversation. Another installment of our French Quarter Fest series, chatting with the fantastic Robin Barnes and the equally fantastic Doyle Cooper. Once again, thanks to our friends at Louisiana Music Factory, 421 Frenchman Street, the greatest record store in the world, for hosting us. And of course, thanks to our partners at French Quarter Festivals Incorporated for partnering up with us to do this series. And we hope to see you out there, of course, at Satchmo Fest, August 2nd through the 4th. We'll be out there. Don't miss that one. Friends, we're going to bounce right back over to Louisiana Music Factory and continue with our interview with Robin and Doyle. Here we go. Yep, another shot with Noah Drinks. Brian Diaz here with you, friends. Thanks for listening in this week. We are having our French Quarter Fest series continues, talking about Satchmo Summerfest coming up here in early August. Oh, yeah, August. And talking
hot,
about the weather.
Sweaty August.
Hot, sweaty August. At least they have the tents like in Misters now.
There'll be stuff fans, like
there'll be fans.
I remember when they didn't do
cool
that.
Cool drinks. I remember when they didn't do that, too.
That was brutal.
That was really, really tough. But now they've improved. They've improved our atmosphere there. Good job, French Quarter Festivals Incorporated, our good friends there. We're giving everybody a round of applause. Golf clap, golf clap. Well done. Well, and I'm chatting here, of course, with Robin Barnes and Doyle Cooper. And we were talking during one of the breaks, and actually maybe on the air, I don't remember, about being a professional musician and kind of what that means. And it means a whole lot more than just what your stage presentation is, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I always say that there's a distinct difference between just a regular musician and a professional musician, because in a sense of a professional musician has to make sure this sounds crazy, but dress well. Mm-hmm. Make sure they shower. Make sure that they're dealing with the marketing prior to the show, making sure they're dealing with the management prior to the show, making sure they actually make sure they get paid before prior to the show. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's after the show, but that's through negotiation. But you have to think about what your set list is going to be. Some people are creative based upon the audience, but then what happens if something happens with the audience? What if you need to change things up? What if you need to create something? What if you get a request? You have to always be, if you will, on, you know, because this person is here to see you. That's what you have to remind yourself. This person is not doing, you're not doing them a favor. It's completely mutual love.
Right.
You're there to perform for them and give them an experience just as well as they're there to pay to enjoy it. But I think with musicians, we have such much more to deal with than just the performance. We have to think about what's going to happen afterwards. We have to think about where we're going to park before. We have to think about what if there's traffic. There's so many elements. So if you
like
see,
life, right?
Like a real job, you know, except we love what we do.
Right, right. What about you, Doyle? I mean, and like, you got to take care of the room too, right?
Like she said, there's a difference. What I like to say is there's a difference between a musician and an entertainer.
Mm-hmm.
Because anybody that takes a music class can be a musician, a mm-hmm. quote-unquote musician. Mm-hmm. But to entertain means... Oh, sorry.
That's right.
But to entertain means that you have to, you know, be able to look at the crowd and say, okay, they're not really attentive with this type of music. Let's try to change it up to get their attention. Or to, you know, to make sure, you know, keeping an eye out, you know, if they're leaning in and screaming at each other, maybe you should draw the volume back a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, simple little things like that really sets people apart as a band leader or somebody that's, you know, controlling the gig.
And a professional entertainer.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, what about, and I want to give a shout out to all of our good friends in the hospitality industry here, because I think we know here in New Orleans that the blending, if you will, of hospitality, music, food, the whole mm-hmm. culture, it's all, you know, in one big pot of tapestry, as I like to call it. That matters too, how you guys are not, it's not only up to the bartender and the servers and so on and so forth to present the room, you're also presenting the room as the musicians. Is that fair to say?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, and what are some things that, what matters there to you? I mean, how do you guys handle that when you're understanding that the whole room has to work?
Like Robin said, you know, you have to look professional. You know, if they're looking, somebody's looking in the window and the band looks like a ragtag bunch of musicians that, you know, he went around and picked up everybody right before the gig. Said, hey, can you make this? And, you know, you know, people in their mind, even if they can't hear you, they say, oh, that's probably not going to be that great. Mm-hmm. You know, and they're going to walk on to the next one. Mm-hmm. But if you and the bar, if the band and the bar staff look professional and look good, you're more likely to have bigger crowds in there because, oh, these people have put in the time and the effort to do this. Let's see what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a great point.
I think, I mean, exactly what he's saying, you know, in addition to looking good, it's all about energy. Mm-hmm. I mean, exactly what he just said. Mm-hmm. People can decide something based on what it looks like. Not necessarily do you have to be skinny and look, you know, gorgeous, but it's a situation of, she looks depressed. She looks like she doesn't want to be at this gig. I'm not walking into that bar. Or the bartender looks like they barely had any sleep. I don't want to bother them. You know, I've learned with the audience, when they're looking in the bar, it's not necessarily that they're judging you. It's more or less, you'd be surprised how many people are a little bit more like, I don't want to bother them. They look like mm-hmm. they're not having mm-hmm. a good time, and I don't want to be that too. Mm-hmm. So let me exactly. just find another bar that's more popping and happy so I can mm-hmm. be happy. It really does translate a lot with energy.
It does, right. And that emotion does convey too, mm-hmm. doesn't it? And I mean, yes. in the audience, you see that when it's kind of lifeless. And even if we take the music out of the equation, if you're just at a restaurant or a bar, if there's not a good vibe going on in the restaurant,
atmosphere.
The bar, yeah, the food doesn't taste as good as the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Yeah, right. Well, so you guys are getting ready both to travel. I know, Dole, you got a whirlwind of a tour coming up, don't you?
Yeah, I'm touring with Soul Brass Band.
Awesome.
Oh, right on.
Yeah, on sousaphone, and we're going all over the place: New York, Turkey, the Netherlands, Italy. We'll even be in Bonnaroo.
I see you saying that. Like, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Cool. And so all within about a month, huh?
Yeah, we'll be in Bonnaroo. Obviously, that's next week. But we start our tour in June, like June 27th, and then I'll be back right before Satchmo Fest.
Yeah,
it's
right.
June 28th, we land back, and
July 28th. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so cool. I get a couple days to breathe, and then have to be ready for
step out in the
yeah,
heat.
Exactly. A couple days in the AC.
What about you, Robin?
Well, actually, I just got back from Cali, and I leave for New York next week. I'm going to be performing for the Hudson River Jazz Concert Series they have out there.
Oh, cool.
And then I'll be doing a tour in Colorado. But I'm excited because Move Your Brass, this is our first year. We're going to be presenting our Bounce Your Brass class at Bonnaroo. So
awesome.
I won't be there, but wow. Move Your Brass will be there. So please stop by and get the band to start, you know, twerking a little bit.
Yeah,
that would
show
be
them how
hilarious.
To do it. I cannot twerk. For the record, I cannot twerk.
I'm not even sure what it means. No, I'm kidding. Well, awesome. Well, you guys, do me a favor. One more time, tell people. We'll start with you, Robin. Website and all that stuff. And then when are you playing Satchmo Fest? Let's reiterate that one.
So I'll be playing Satchmo Fest August 3rd. That's a Saturday from 6 to 7:10. And you can find me at robinbarnesmusic.com. On Facebook, it's Robin Barnes Music. And Instagram is @ New Orleans Songbird.
Awesome. And we can see you at the Windsor Court on a
regular basis. And you can see me at the Windsor Court Fridays and Saturdays. And then Spotted Cat on Sundays.
Cool.
And Spotted Cat is actually Robin and the Firebirds.
That's okay. So then okay, gotcha. Cool. And what about you, Doyle?
I'll be playing Satchmo Fest August 3rd at 1:30. I'm not sure when we end. It's probably some
2:40. So okay, it's probably, that hour 10.
Yeah,
thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, something like that. My band plays every Friday at the Bourbon O from 8 to midnight, and you can catch us there, have a nice cocktail with us. And you can find us online at the Doyle Cooper Jazz Band.com. Sorry, not the, sorry, DoyleCooperJazzBand.com and RedHotBrassBand.com.
Awesome. Perfect. And we're gonna close out this segment here, friends, because even though New Orleans is an easygoing place, Doyle's got just a couple minutes left in his parking meter, and we're not laxed in the
they
city
are
about
ruthless.
They are ruthless yes. here, so we want to make sure that he doesn't get ticketed on this Saturday where we're taping the show. I want to give a special shout out to our friends here at Louisiana Music Factory. Thanks for them hosting us, 420 Frenchman Street, the finest record store in the world. I'm assuming both of y'all have your music here, that people get stuff here. Yeah. So come in here, pay these guys a visit, patronize them. Great place, great knowledge. Doyle, Robin, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
A lot of fun. Friends, after a brief musical interlude, I'll be back with my parting shot. All right, everybody, thanks for listening into the show this week. As always, friends, I appreciate it very much. Got a good show coming up for you next week. We're going to be talking about the craft brew industry here in Louisiana with a healthy dose of discussion on distribution laws and our three-tiered system here. Many would argue, this host included, that our laws are largely ineffectual, the system itself, as well as being rather archaic and damaging to the craft brew industry and other small producers of alcohol in the state. I will be joined by Carlos Knott, who is the owner of Bayou Tesh Brewery, Carrie Koch, who is the executive director of the Louisiana Craft Brewery Association, of which Carlos is the president, and then also David Blossman, who is the owner of Abita Brewery, will be taping the show up there at Abita Friends. So a report was just given to the New Orleans City Council, some concerning numbers and concerning trends. The report was given by the Data Center, a great organization that does a lot of fantastic demographic statistical work, reporting on economy and other number-driven things, data-driven things here in the city that aid politicians, policymakers, the media, and many other groups in accessing data, making decisions, reporting on the data, so on and so forth. And some of the work that was also reported was based on the work of Dr. John Williams at UNO. But what we're looking at, friends, is really here in New Orleans, among a declining population and declining wages, as well as a growing wage gap in the hospitality industry, which largely cuts along racial lines. The city needs to address some hard questions and dynamics. The hospitality industry needs to address these questions and these dynamics as well. As many of us know, after Katrina, New Orleans was one of the fastest growing cities in the country. And I mentioned declining population. It's not huge. I mean, we had a significant drop in population, of course, after Katrina. But the population now is estimated to be down about 1,000 people since 2016. This is coupled with housing costs going up. We know property values have continued to go up, specifically in many neighborhoods that were more friendly to the working class. We see that the average median rent in New Orleans is approaching the national average. Of course, this was a far more affordable place to live just a handful of years ago. I mentioned that wages are down, and we are seeing a growing racial disparity in the hospitality industry as far as who is making money and who is not. And this is, of course, the city's main industry. There is also the claim, and this claim was made by City Councilwoman Kristen Palmer, that the city needs to improve its marketing for tourism purposes. And she cited the city of Charleston, South Carolina. She said that the stay there is a minimum of 72 hours per person. They have a deeper spend, meaning tourists spend more money per head per day. And it's actually less tourists number-wise, but with a bigger spend, as I mentioned. So she argues that that creates less problems or less stress on the infrastructure. She adds that Charleston is a much more sustainable tourist culture. Now, here in New Orleans, I'm not sure exactly that we can make those comparisons so much with the convention business and just the nature of tourism and our very cyclical seasonal tourism here. It's a little easier said than done, but some good points made there. We do know that the daily spend by tourists is declining. I was trying to get that number from Dr. Williams that I just mentioned, and I haven't heard back from him yet. If I do get that number, I'll keep working on it, and I will let you know how that number has dropped compared to recent years. But also, the median household income has fallen 5% in New Orleans since 1999. In fact, half of all families and households actually earn less than $37,000 annually. Of course, that is a very low number when we look at many other metropolitan areas in the country. Health services, it's a bit of a bright spot. They're paying a better wage in the city. As a matter of fact, the average salary there is $50,000 a year, and that industry is made up of 44% African Americans. Now, another number that I have not gotten my hands on, or if this was reported on or not, how many of those jobs in that median number of 50,000 in the healthcare industry
where are the jobs that the African Americans predominantly are holding versus other groups, that I could see that number being quite skewed in some ways, but nonetheless, overall seen as a bright spot. And I'm just speculating there, just want to be careful with that, but that would seem to be perhaps logical. So therefore, there has been a call to develop health sector jobs and also digital media jobs in the city, which I have no particular beef with. But circling back here to the hospitality industry, you know, these numbers are concerning. And I want to cite a report by Ian McNulty and Jeff Adelson from The Advocate that was done about a year ago. As a matter of fact, if you go back and listen to our show, I believe it was from July of last year, Ian was on with us talking in large part about this detailed study they did on the number of restaurants, restaurant closures, and some other considerations in the overall restaurant industry in the city. But I'll remind you, if you don't recall or didn't hear what some of those numbers were, prior to Katrina on August 1st, 2005, it was estimated the city had 984 restaurants. That number dipped to an all-time low or a period low of 741 restaurants there at the end of October 2006. As of 1 year ago when that report came out, the estimated number was 1,216. So that's a 24% increase from pre-Katrina levels to 1 year ago. It's estimated that the population 1 year ago was 393,000 people in New Orleans. That's about 81% of the pre-Katrina number. So what does that mean? At the time a year ago, Katrina, there were 500 residents per restaurant in 2005. Now it's about 325 residents per restaurant. Of course, tourism overall continues to be up. Numbers are generally strong there. We do know that the summers are tough. We've talked a lot about the restaurant industry on this show. You know that we are very cyclical. It is the locals that keep the restaurants open, by and large, with some exceptions during the low summer months. And that's troubling when we start talking about wages being down, the wage disparity in the hospitality industry, because frankly, friends, the hospitality industry here in New Orleans supports the hospitality industry in a big way. This is a problem. I think one of the things we also need to consider is talking about establishments in less touristy neighborhoods. We've seen areas like the Bywater struggle greatly. And we also know that many of the neighborhoods that are not uptown, that are not the French Quarter, are such critical neighborhoods. It's a source of labor. It's a source of culture that really drives so much of the hospitality and tourism industry of the city. We need healthy industries and healthy neighborhoods, excuse me. And so those people in those neighborhoods need to be earning a good wage. These people, by and large, in many of these neighborhoods are the people that are working in the hospitality industry. Kind of where I'm going with this, I think it's kind of obvious. I think we might be kind of looking at potentially a bit of a vicious cycle here. Now, a significant part to me of being sustainable in the industry here in New Orleans is addressing the wage gap for the reasons that I just said, really because, one, it helps support the economy, but we're also talking, as I mentioned, the front of house, back of house dividing, and not going too far down that road, but who's holding what jobs in the industry? There is a racial divide there. There is a growing disparity. White males are making more money. Other segments of society are making less money in the hospitality industry. So that raises serious ethical considerations and also serious socioeconomic questions about the long-term sustainability, in my view, of the industry. The labor needs to be there. People need to be paid a good wage in order to support the industry, to continue to have it to exist, which, of course, is the lifeblood. It is the bedrock of the economy of New Orleans. Now, there's no silver bullet here. I think there's definitely many, many things that can be done. We need to support organizations like Cafe Reconcile and Cafe Hope, who provide opportunities to learn about the hospitality, the culinary industries, especially for at-risk youth and other marginalized groups in the city, hopefully creating a bit of a pipeline and more opportunity for people in those situations to enter the industry. We need to support the New Orleans Culinary and Hospitality Institute, otherwise known as NOCI, and making sure that that institute continues to be able to provide opportunities for similar populations to take advantage of their education programs and also get into the industry. We need more opportunities for people of color. We need more opportunities for women. We need more opportunities for the LGBT community in these critical spaces, in these critical businesses here in the city. And we've talked about this on the show before, but having a more diverse workforce, both in the front of house and back of house, makes for a better team. It makes for a better experience for the wide range of guests that we actually attract here in New Orleans. And again, we've talked about that quite a bit on the show. You can go check that out. I also think we need to support things like urban gardens. These are ways that certain satellite neighborhoods, I hate to call them that, but other neighborhoods not called the French Quarter or uptown in the city can take advantage of the hospitality industry and create alternative economies or complementary economies to that industry by growing in urban gardens and providing to restaurants. We start to see more of that pop up, but that's another great way that I think we can support things. We need to support minority-owned businesses. And, you know, because of what this show is about, also with an emphasis on the hospitality industry, I think, but as well as many other businesses included. We need to support healthy neighborhood initiatives for reasons that I just mentioned. We need healthy neighborhoods that are not called the French Quarter uptown, as I keep saying, because this is where our labor force exists. This is where this is the formation of so much of the culture, the culinary talent, the music, all these things that we talk so much about on the show. We know here in New Orleans, they come from these neighborhoods. So we need to support these healthy neighborhood initiatives to make sure that what forms the basis of our hospitality and tourism industry here, the fuel, if you will, continues to have a pipeline and it continues to work. We also need to support affordable housing in neighborhoods that are near hospitality and tourism centers. That has become a big problem as people get pushed further and further away from the city. It becomes less tenable for them to be able to travel to work, especially because we're talking about wages being down for many in the industry. We also need to promote culturally sensitive tourism in other neighborhoods. We don't need cultural appropriation. We don't need situations where people are being taken advantage of. That is a significant problem. Again, a lot to unpack there. But responsible tourism in other neighborhoods to shed more light on the wonder that is New Orleans, but also to share some of the economic advantages of the hospitality and tourism industry here. Transportation, I just mentioned that. That's also critical, that we need to make sure that there is viable, affordable transportation for people to be able to get to work in this particular industry, as well as in any other number of industries around town. So diversifying the economy is wise, but I think we all know here that tourism and hospitality are mainstays and will continue to be the backbone of the economy of New Orleans for the foreseeable future. So therefore, there needs to be more equity in the industry. There needs to be more opportunity created by the industry itself, by the city, and by us supporting other programs within New Orleans to make sure that the tourism and hospitality industry are both sustainable and ethical. Friends, that's our parting shot. Here's to you.